You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
This is the No Doubt About It podcast.
No Doubt About It.
Now your hosts, Christy and Mark Ronchetti. Wildfire,
you can catch a fire. It is a tense studio. Ella was scolding me.
Well, she's tired. She comes and helps us after school.
Yeah.
And sometimes she's a little worn down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's one of those producers. She's not putting up with a lot of guff.
Yeah. I had producers like that back in my news days. They're just like, let's get down to it. Yeah. And then they would talk to you in your ear. All business.
I always love a producer who thinks that they control the show. Okay. I got some stories if you want to have some of those.
No. We appreciate your time, Ella.
No, Ella's doing well. She's not having it right now.
No,
she's
we like, asked her to turn on her microphone done. And she's like, no, I'm not going to talk right now.
She's not doing it. She wants to keep things moving.
We're trying to talk her into it because I even got great emails about Ella and Ava today.
Yeah.
So people like to hear from you, just so you know.
Yeah, no, but nothing. Ella's giving us nothing today.
She's giving us nothing today. She's got her she's got her focus on the show.
Yeah, and or her project.
Have a project for school. So we are those parents that are making her do two things.
Yeah, today. It's called, you know, you put in some work in the salt mine, and then you can go do whatever it is you're doing.
Freedom to do your schoolwork.
Yeah, your schoolwork.
We're such good parents.
Yeah.
Because we were sharing our Gen X stories on the last episode.
Right.
And she said, Mom, you should tell everybody about like the fact that, you know, you basically had to do all these chores and you cooked dinner and you were like six and like that stuff that you wouldn't let us do.
Right.
And I was like, well, I mean, I can, but I don't think I was unusual. I think most kids I knew had a list of chores that were fully expected. Like your mom didn't tell you every day, by the time I get home, I expect A, B, C, and D done. You knew that was your responsibility. So I told Ava, I'm like, I feel like for you guys,
yeah,
I repeat myself a lot and say, okay, here's what I need done. Here's what I'm expecting of you this week or this weekend or Saturday or Friday or whatever it is. My mom said it, I think, one time.
And that was it. You understood.
And my brother and my sister and we got it.
Well, I do think you are a little different. I will be honest. At the age of seven, my mom wasn't like those. She didn't have the chores lined out so that when I got home, dinner was made, or when she got home, dinner was made and we were all set to go. And by 14, I wasn't driving. So, yes, you're a little different. You were given some additional responsibilities.
Apparently, my mom saw a young adult at a very early age.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what happened. That's how
no,
she did it.
I was a latchkey kid. There's a lot of latchkey kids in the 80s. It was a big thing. You got your own key. You get in, your mom's working.
Yeah.
She wasn't like, hey, kids, make me dinner. That was never my mom,
right,
ever.
Right. No, your mom was not. No, no, no.
She would either it would usually be like, hey, heat up the leftovers of the meal I just cooked for you on Sunday. That kind of thing. And get the dishwasher done, the cat's fed.
Yeah, I know.
Mow the lawn. The house.
Roof the house, do whatever. Yeah, we need some new gutters. Get up there and get the gutter work done.
No.
At the age of eight.
She instilled hard work in all of us, and I try to do the same thing now, and I come off as the heavy. The heavy parent now because I have an expectation.
I don't think you're the heavy parent at all. I think that we do have an expectation. Now, you know, whether that's always met or not.
No. We don't want to do that to anybody, but no.
No, it's good. Okay.
Good show we had with Kenyon. We got a lot of good positive responses about Kenyon. So that cowboy that we had on, that I was just listening to a little bit of it the other day, not watching it. His accent is so strong. He's just cowboy through and through.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, there's nobody like Kenyon.
I do love him.
He should be the voice of the cowboy cartoon.
Yeah.
I don't think it's out yet.
Yeah.
I think it's in development. It needs to be in development. And Kenyon is the voice for that.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he was fun. Anyway, we got some good comments.
Yeah.
I'll get to those in a second. But before we do, we want to encourage you guys to get on our YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button. I know I say this every couple shows, but it's really important to us. It helps us with our analytics. It helps people see that we have enough followers that they want to come and join our show and have a conversation with all of you. So it benefits you guys just as much as it benefits us. And really, it's free. All you got to do is hit that subscribe button. We have a big goal now. Very big goal, and we would really appreciate it if you could do that or rate us and like us on your favorite podcast platform.
And that's how we got one of our guests coming up here in just a few minutes, Todd Bensman, who wrote one of the really critical books on the border. And it's called Overrun, and we'll get to that in a minute. I'm going to have Todd in just a couple of minutes. It's a fascinating book. and lets you really look inside what's happening with the border crisis. It is amazing stuff. And we'll get more to that in just a minute.
It's one of those books that you should read, but it's going to terrify you.
Yeah, there's a lot in there.
Yeah, it's a lot of information that, like, and I know people sometimes don't want to know about it, which is one of our comments, actually.
Okay. But, all right, get to it. What do we got for comments?
The first one was very kind. It was from Patricia Luna.
Yeah.
And she said, I love this. This was in the response to the Southwest story. And then we've been covering all these airline stories of all these airplanes either falling apart or maggots in them or whatever.
You always love mentioning the maggots on the plane.
Well, because who has maggots on a plane? I'm sorry. No, it's gross. Okay. Patricia Luna says, I'm going to start wearing my own parachute when I fly. And I wrote her back and said, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, actually, these days, sadly.
Yeah.
So thank you, Patricia, for writing in. Here's one. This was in response to our email. If you want to sign up for an email list, we don't spam you. We just basically let you know what's coming down the pike on our show the next day or it just aired or we just released it. And so that's at info@nodoubtaboutitpodcast.com. If you want to sign up or just go to our website, which is nodoubtaboutitpodcast.com, and you'll see a little button there. It says sign up for our emails. And we do
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, that is the best way to do it. And that is, we don't spam you. We send you maybe two, maybe three emails a week if we put a lot of content out. But we put out the content about the border crisis that we just had that show on Monday.
Right.
And here was a response from, I want to say Dr. Lockvik.
Okay.
That's my best guess at that name.
Yeah.
And it says, fear mongering again. If you want my support, you need to grow up.
Whoa. Dr. Lockvik.
I don't know. I'm going to guess that this person, I think it's a woman, but I don't know if it's a woman or not.
Okay.
My guess is she didn't watch the show because we actually use real sources, real content, real data, real video, real statistical stuff before we start talking about it. It's not a gossip show.
Right.
We're not Us Weekly.
We're hearing rumors.
Yeah. I mean, we're not Us Weekly.
That Leonardo DiCaprio is trying to come over into the country illegally.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, what? No.
We're not fear-mongering. At the point where you have even both sides now, you even have, you know, some of the very well-known Democrats that are saying, hey, we got a real issue going on at the border and we need to be paying attention.
Well, yeah. The just because you have a story or something unfolding that doesn't match your priors, the things you'd like to believe. I get that sometimes that's difficult to take and you don't necessarily want to deal with it, especially in a hyper-partisan time where people are putting on their jerseys and finding excuses for things that are not going well instead of just addressing the issue. And this is what we say about so many issues. They're not partisan. I don't care who you are. If you can't get services in your community because we have an open border, we have a problem here and it's not good for the people coming over the border, and it's not good for people in this country not to have an orderly process to bring people in the country. So if you'd like to, you know, look at this and say, I don't want to deal with it, and this is fear-mongering, then you're not paying attention because these issues are not just in border communities. They're in places like Denver, which we're going to talk about in a minute. They're in places like Chicago and New York. This is clear. It's spun out of control. We can either come together as a country and solve it, or we can continue to put on our jerseys and ignore it.
Linda Brown wrote us in, said, great show today. I'm angered by how our government officials get up each morning, keeping the blinds closed to avoid important issues. And most importantly, us, the actual citizens of New Mexico. I have to agree with Christy on our previous shows. I too feel as if the news stations here in New Mexico are bound to some sort of don't tell the public guidelines. However, if that's not the case, then why aren't they covering the border problems? Why they don't identify the people committing crimes? Are they just bad citizens or are they illegals? I get it. We are all migrants, but the difference is legal versus illegal. So thank you so much for that comment too, Linda. And then one more, I did put it in here just for privacy purposes, but a really nice comment. We do accept donations because that's how we run our podcast, just so everybody's aware of that. And a gentleman wrote in, gave us a donation with a really nice heartfelt message to you, Mark, saying, you should have won. I'll vote for you again if you run again. But in the meantime, nice. I support your show and I support what you're trying to do and trying to get the message out.
Super nice.
Along with the donation. So thank you so much. We appreciate all of those folks. And if you feel like supporting us with either buying some of the wares that we have or making a donation, again, that's on our website, which is at nodoubtaboutitpodcast.com.
Okay.
And now we can dive in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is going to be a border episode. No doubt.
It's not a fear-mongering one, though. It's an actual fact-finding one.
Right. So Matt Finn over the weekend, we talked about this on our last episode, and it ends up continuing to be a significant issue. If we go back to last episode, we talked about Mount Cristo Rey, which is in Doñana County in southern New Mexico. And this is what Matt Finn had to say about it in a tweet Unbelievable. A Border Patrol agent in Sunland Park, New Mexico, just told us a mountain in the United States is not ours anymore. It's theirs, referring to the cartels. We literally spent 5 minutes on Mount Cristo Rey and the groups of illegals breezed on by. And then a second tweet followed that up. And he said this. He said, mind-blowing. Illegal immigration activity again on Mount Cristo Rey in New Mexico. It's swarming with scouts and coyotes, some masked who are freely and openly transporting groups of illegals in broad daylight. A business. And so this mountain is in New Mexico. Do we have efforts right now on a state level to try to take this mountain back from the cartels? The answer appears to be no at this point. And it's staggering. It's about a 900-foot mountain above, you know, the terrain around it here. Again, there are a lot of pilgrimages up here at certain times of year, especially around Good Friday. And to have this being taken over is not a surprise, given that what's happening in Texas. And they are pushing very hard in Texas to secure their border. We are not in New Mexico. And so we're going to talk to Todd about this in just a couple of minutes here. But then there was video that popped up right after these tweets showing the migrants coming right across.
Right.
And again, remember, because of where New Mexico is, there are no services here. This tends to be people who do not want to be contacted by Border Patrol or anybody else. So the issue here is the location, because Mount Cristo Rey in Doniana County is rugged terrain. And as they climb over this, what we hear from Border Patrol and DPS in Texas and even some state police in New Mexico is these are people that tend to not want to be encountered by anyone as they're brought over by the cartels because they don't want their background checked. So that puts New Mexico in even more danger, and it has to be dealt with here. And so this cannot be something that we ignore. And to lose a mountain in New Mexico to the cartels is completely unacceptable.
Well, and if you go through this tweet and you actually read some of those comments, I brought this up on Monday's show too. The people that are official there, like that know the area, are now warning hunters. Don't go in this area. Don't go in some of these areas that we know cartel are coming through. Don't do this. It's not safe for you anymore to hunt.
Right.
So I'm sorry, Lynn, this is now impacting us in many different ways. This is a new one for me. When I was reading those comments on Twitter, I was like, you got to be joking me that now it's like, sorry, no, don't even go in that area anymore. It's getting overrun.
Well, and that makes sense when you look at the broader scope where the cartels now, because they've been unfettered in how much of what they've done, their main money-making operation is human transport now.
Yeah, not even the drugs anymore.
And they're creeping into the country and going more and more into the country. And if you think it's going to stop at Mount Cristo Rey, it's not, unless we stand up and stop it. And so that has to be done. But it isn't just people getting on mountains in southern New Mexico that are affecting things.
No, it's impacting. We have a pretty interesting story here out of Denver. It's impacting their health systems there. We've talked about it, that it affects our health systems here locally. Just putting too much, we don't have enough resources basically to supply healthcare to all these migrants that are coming in. Denver now is even talking about, hey, we're not sure we're going to be able to keep some of these hospitals even open at this point. So it's too much stress on them as well. So we want to play you a little bit of this story.
This is at a CBS4 in Denver. And so they went with a story where they went to the Denver health system and tried to figure out what's going on here. And we'll just play about a minute of this, but it is very interesting. And it's a cautionary tale, I think, for other communities that maybe haven't seen these impacts yet. I think we're likely to see them spread.
Estimates that over the past 3 months, they've had about 5,800 new migrant patients system-wide. At UC Health Hospital in Aurora, they've treated an estimated 2,500 new patients from outside the country. Your reporter, Alan Janay, joins us from Aurora tonight. And Alan, leaders there tell you they are struggling to keep up.
Well, good point, Michael. They do say that the increase here is about 80% over what it was a year before for that 3 month period, November to January. Even figuring out who is a migrant is difficult because they don't ask people directly. Some do volunteer. Others, they find out because they don't have social security numbers or insurance, and they do volunteer that they're from another country.
Among the crush of arrivals, the people coming into the metro area have brought children, burdens, and health problems.
There's a lot of stress in that.
These people are quite desperate.
I think that is an understatement.
At UC Health Hospital in Aurora, says CU's chair of emergency medicine, the thousands arriving in the emergency department are overwhelming.
We continue to add more and more resources. We continue to add more and more capacity, but there are limits. But right now it's disproportionate and it's unsustainable.
Denver Health Medical Center recently said the same, adding it would be forced to turn away some patients.
Do we have to set up a system we just don't have?
There currently is not a system to handle the numbers of migrants that are here in Colorado.
Okay, so this gives you an idea of what they're dealing with.
Right.
And we haven't heard as much about that in New Mexico yet. But I think we've also got some anecdotal information that people have been at UNMH are talking about these issues as
right,
well.
Right. I do think it's going to keep it. This is just the beginning of some of the issues we're going to continue to be
seeing. Well, it's cascades, right? And that's part of the problem that we have is that it does cascade because it doesn't just stay limited to certain border communities. As people are dispersed throughout the country, we're not prepared for this. And so that's why we've always said the whole policy of an open border is not compassionate. It's cruel.
Right.
And just say it all the time. And it's absolutely true. And so that's why we wanted to talk to Todd Bensman, because he wrote the book Overrun. And this is what that book looks like right here. And he started his career as a journalist for nearly 20 years. He then spent 10 years in counterterrorism with the Texas DPS. And Todd now serves as a senior national security fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. And he's the author of Overrun. So when I saw this book and read it, I was like, holy cow. I mean, this is a massive issue. And he's somebody who we really are excited to at least learn more about the process and maybe what we can do and expect to try to improve things.
Right. I mean, he's even capturing some really fascinating drone video that isn't being shown everywhere else that we've been sharing on our show.
Right.
I don't know if it's directly his or he's getting it from somebody else, but he's trying to shed light on this. He goes into Mexico and wants to show us the other side coming up with the folks coming up. So.
Right. And here's that video right now, and you can see it. What we've got here is people that are kind of lined up. It's basically right through the razor wire, and then they're led in to the main effectively border wall. And the border wall, everywhere you're walking, where you're seeing them walking right now, that is U.S. territory.
Right.
Okay. And then they're just let in the border wall and they're put in a van with no windows. And then they're quietly brought into the country and let out. So this is stuff that happens all the time. And Todd was basically in Juarez over the past couple of weeks. And we'll talk to him about that as well.
Yeah, he's got a lot of insight, I'm sure. So
all right.
Let's get right to him.
All right. Here's Todd Bensman.
You're listening to the No Doubt About It podcast. Back to your hosts, Christy and Mark Ronchetti.
Okay. It's time.
It is time. I say we just dive right in.
Go and dive right in.
Yeah. Todd's got a lot to offer people that they don't normally maybe necessarily get to hear. So
okay.
I think this is the time to,
okay.
to get him on.
Todd Bensman, back from Mexico, just on the other side of New Mexico, close to what happens in El Paso and near Juarez as well, and obviously near Sunland Park. Todd, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Great to be here. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So let's talk about this, because you're somebody who has intimate knowledge, as we talked about in the segment before, about what's going on down there. We've watched your Twitter feed. We know what you've been doing. Talk to me a little bit about your trip that you just got back from. Tell me what you're seeing down across the other side of the border from New Mexico.
Well, what drew me to that part of Mexico this time was the bonsai charges of the week or two before. Of all these immigrants were gathering up and storming over right through the Texas fortifications and powering right over and through the Texas National Guard. Those videos went viral around the world. And I was just thinking, well, my God, what, you know, nobody went over to the other side to see, you know, what was going on over there. What was all that about? So I thought that was a good opportunity, and plus I hadn't been over there in a good year or so. So it was a good time to kind of come back to it. And there's so many things happening. There are different forces and factors working against each other and with each other that, in my opinion, all result and accrue as a benefit to the immigrants. what I mean by that is you have Texas and Governor Greg Abbott just absolutely pile driving. It has to be tens of millions of dollars in to fortifications in that sector because of those bonsai charges. It was unbelievable. So they are the Texans are building more fortifications in depth, anti-climbing walls, multiple layers of concertina wire for miles and miles and miles, all the way past gate 42 until it gets to a point where physically they can't really go anymore. There's water and lakes and things over there. So that is one factor, is that you have the Texas stop and block operations behind the concertina wire that's going on. At the same time, you have Border Patrol, who answer to the White House's DHS, Mayorkas, who are behind them, who act as a Star Trek tractor beam for the immigrants to bust through the Texas fortifications, because if they do, they get into the country immediately forever. So the Texans are a barrier, but they are not an impenetrable barrier, at least not yet. And so you have this dynamic between the federal and the state forces that are acting in different ways on the immigrants.
And we don't really see those changes so much between New Mexico federally and statewide. Like Texas is really trying to take initiative there. New Mexico, not so much.
Exactly. And so therefore, you have on the west side of Juarez, where I spent several days, that is across from New Mexico, as you guys well know. And there is nothing like Texas fortifications over there. It's just wide open desert. Your governor will not allow state police to do anything at all on that border, keeps them away and leaves it to Border Patrol, which, as I just told you, act as a shining beacon of, we're going to let you all in right away over there. But in any case, there aren't even very many Border Patrol over there because they're so busy processing immigrants who turn themselves in, who get through the wire and turn themselves in. So on the west side of Juarez, you have a completely different operation, which is a cartel run. La Linea cartel is over there. They control the wall, about 8 or 9 miles of wall right there across from Santa Teresa,
yeah,
San Ysidro Station. And they are running hundreds a night, immigrants that are paying thousands of dollars each to go over that wall and through that wall. And then it's because as soon as they get through, they're just running to the nearest road and highway. They get picked up and then they get transported into El Paso, where the Texans are waiting for them in a separate operation on that side. So there's all this stuff happening. And at the same time, another thing that's happening is that the Mexican government, and I mean the central government, Mexico City, is standing up a massive, aggressive, medieval crackdown on immigrants on its side in this sector. I watched it happen. I was there. That is part of a Biden deal, diplomatic deal with López Obrador, that they established in December to reduce the political optics of mass numbers crossing the border. Like, it looks terrible now when they're bonsai charging and everything else, but it's nothing like what it was in October, November, and December.
Yeah.
When the border was seeing 14,000 a day. Now it's more like 7,000 a day.
But it's,
that's all the Mexicans.
But it is interesting too, because what you do see, Todd, as well as, you know, if you look at the video here, what we're showing you right now is video. That's Mount Cristo Rey, which is now what we've learned through Fox News and some other platforms, is that basically New Mexico law enforcement says, and Mount Cristo Rey is one of these places where there are a lot of pilgrimages during Good Friday, things like that. This is a no-go area now. law enforcement has said this is controlled now by the cartels. So that gets to your point on some of what's happening here because of what we've done in New Mexico. And on the other side of the border, in Juarez, what's interesting is they have a humanitarian government locally. So you have a little bit of a national fight and a local fight as well, because Juarez, what they've told us, and we've gone in and met with the government there, they've said they've set up all these camps for them. In fact, they offer a job to every one of the people that comes through. And of the hundreds of thousands that have come through, Todd, 1,000 have accepted the job. So that gets back to some of your point, and then the draw that you see here. So does it surprise you at all when you hear about what's going on with Mount Cristo Rey and areas like that in New Mexico? Obviously not happening in Texas, but happening with us.
It's perfectly in line with everything that I saw on the ground and everything I know. That area, that mountain, and the territory to the west is engaged in an epidemic. It's undergoing an epidemic of what we call runners and gotaways. These are the immigrants. Let me just back up a second. To the east in Juarez, when they cross the border there, we call them give-ups. They're giving themselves up. They walk. They're looking for the green uniforms, the Biden Border Patrol, and giving themselves up, running from the Texas guys to the green guys, because they're the ones that are going to let them in. Okay. But everybody knows that even then, we're going to run a database check on you and see if you have any criminal history inside the United States before we let you go. It takes a few minutes to run the checks. The people on the west side of Juarez who are going up the mountain and crossing through the fence and over the fence over there are probably criminals that have been deported previously from the United States. And this is their chance to pay their way in and get into the United States easily, because there's hardly any border patrol over there. They're all busy processing on the east side and in the facilities. That's why you have the mountain crawling with runners. We call those runners. And through the holes in the wall that they're cutting and climbing over the ladders and doing all of that. That is a high octane level of criminality. And that is the biggest danger to our country. And they are pouring through into New Mexico at the rate of 200 to 300 every single night. And that's just at night on the midnight shift.
Right. We've been now called a hotspot, which we've known we've been a hotspot. We're finally getting some attention nationally on that. But you've been at this for a long time, Todd. You've been following the border since 2019, somewhere in that department. What kind of change did you see from the Trump administration managing this border to Biden?
Well, when I was down there all the time when Trump was in office too, when he was implementing Remain in Mexico and, sending tens of thousands of immigrants that they caught back over into Mexico. I went to Mexico. I went to Juarez and interviewed hundreds of them. I mean, there would be dozens of them all around me, and I'd be like, hey, what about all you guys? And, what's your story? And they were all going home, because nobody comes for the great Mexican dream. Nobody comes for that. Nobody wants to get stuck in Mexico. And so the UN's International Office for Migration, the IOM, in 2019, there were so many going home that they organized a bus lift for free rides all the way back to Honduras and Guatemala, the places where they said the persecution was too great for them to ever return. Now, if it's between returning home or living in Mexico, it was definitely going home. And the numbers crossing just plummeted over this policy. You just didn't see, you saw mainly runners trying to get through, not any of this give up stuff. The give ups like pretty much ended. We were down to about 1,000 apprehensions a day, and most of them did not get to stay. They got pushed back. And so the number that was actually entering and staying in the United States just plummeted to the lowest number in like 45 years on those policies. Democrats will tell you, and open borders types will tell you today, they say it all the time out loud. The president says it all the time that, you know, that Trump broke the border, that this is all happening because of these Trump policies, which is just like, what?
Yeah.
You're just all insane. You're lying, and nobody knows you're lying except a few people like me who were there.
Well, yeah. And let's talk about that. And let's get, you know, because Christy makes a good point, which is, you know, so what was the change? And this is a huge part of Overrun, because you talk about how much rhetoric matters. So I want to go to a couple of quick sound bites that I want you to react to, because part of this gets to what you talk about in Overrun, is that the people coming to the border have a very clear knowledge of exactly where American politicians stand on the border. It is crystal clear. So okay. I want to go to clip five, and it's going to be two different clips here. The first one is Savannah Guthrie asking a question to all the Democratic presidential candidates in 2020 about health care. And what she's basically asking them is, hey, how many of you support providing free health care for those who cross illegally? And take a look at what the response was.
Tonight about these government health care plans that you've proposed in one form or another. This is a show of hands question, and hold them up for a moment so people can see. Raise your hand if your government plan would provide coverage for undocumented immigrants. Okay. Let me start with Mayor Buttigieg. Why?
Everybody raises their hand, okay? And believe me, and you get to this in crystal clear detail in Overrun, how important that is. I want to hit one other quick clip. Here is Joe Biden talking about what he thinks needs to happen on the border again during a debate.
I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
Todd, he delivered on exactly what he said he would.
Yes, he did. And the entire world heard it loud and clear. I guarantee you that clip right there was cut and posted everywhere around the world, because everybody knows what asylum means, really. It doesn't mean persecution. It means we get past Border Patrol easily and disappear. It's enter and disappear. Is the definition of asylum for the rest of the world. For Americans, it's like, oh my God, you know, persecution, but nobody anywhere else in the world has that definition. And so when he said something like that, and he said many things like that, I recount an episode in the book where I'm driving back from the border and I watch Biden, I stop in a diner in Uvalde to a burger or something. And I'm watching the presidential press conference, and he said something like, we will not turn back any unaccompanied minor because that's cruel and inhumane. And we're going to bring all of them in. That we're not sending any unaccompanied minors to starve to death. And I just kind of went,
yeah,
oh my God, here they come. And now we've had like 800,000, you know, unaccompanied minors.
And isn't that really, I mean, when you really look at it here, we've always made the case that an open border isn't compassionate, it's cruel. And what this has really done is this has led to more and more minors being taken to the border. And likely what we're seeing now is one of the biggest human trafficking catastrophes in the history of the country, because they've lined up policy to make it more attractive for people desperate to get into the country.
It's so starkly true. Listen, I interviewed for the book Diane Erdington, who is a nurse who has been a volunteer healthcare worker in the Darien Gap for 20 years. A friend of mine, I met her and have interviewed her for the book. And, you know, she was describing for me when the Biden administration said, we're going to let all pregnant women in who are 7 months pregnant. And she said, all of a sudden, for the first time in 20 years, I started seeing hundreds and hundreds of advanced stage pregnant women tramping through the Darien Gap jungle, whereas for 20 years, it was just the strongest, youngest men who would go through there, not like super pregnant women, vulnerable women. And they were dying by the droves in the Darien Gap. to come for this policy, that pregnant woman policy. And I can't even tell you, I mean, everywhere, every country I ever visited was filled with 6 and 7 month pregnant women who were coming for that policy. And then the other thing is that they said, we're not turning back any families with young children, 7 and under. And so guess who started coming through that dangerous jungle by the droves? Young children who were getting, you know, killed and ravaged and swept away by floods. And they would all be alive today if it weren't for this policy.
And quickly, just one quick question for us. That story, you also recount a story in Alamogordo of a little boy, Felipe. Can you tell just a quick thing on that before Christy's next question?
Yeah, I mean, children that died, I think Felipe had he was sick and his father brought him over. They were from Guatemala. And the way the press portrayed this was like, because we have Trump stout, you know, bad laws, it killed the Felipe. But like he would have stayed home otherwise. So I went to he was fleeing terrible persecution. So I went to his home village in Guatemala, this indigenous village, and a bunch more up there besides. And what it turns out to be is that they're coming to the U.S. to send money home to build big giant houses, not fleeing any kind of persecution or even gang violence or anything. They just wanted to build a house and then return to it and live in the house, which is not government persecution. That's called house envy. And so it was the policy, again, of the asylum that really, more than anything else, killed that boy. They would have stayed home if they knew that they couldn't get in. If they knew before they left that they couldn't get in, that boy and lots of children just like him and pregnant women would be alive today. It's absolutely tragic. People on the other side view stories like what I'm telling you as like propaganda or something, but it is just so totally true that that policy kills. Policy kills.
And why do you think it is? I mean, the biggest question Mark and I have talked about is, why would any party be completely open to, you know, just supporting open borders? I guess I just don't understand it. In the Obama era, Obama was kind of known as the deportation. He was the guy that was leading deportations. What changed in your view?
Well, that's a big, complicated question. That's chapter 4, which I think, if memory serves me, it's about 10,000 words, but every bit of it's interesting.
It is. Yeah.
Well, give us a quick synopsis of your opinion on that.
But the quick answer to that is Donald Trump's era, his 4 years, which was predicated on, he won the election on the immigration platform. He may win it again on the immigration platform. And this was a reaction against those policies that went way, way, way too far on the left. You had people in the progressive liberal part of the Democratic Party coalition that were super empowered. They were small, but they were hardcore voters. Every one of them was going to vote. And the Biden administration recognized that it needed those kind of Bernie Sanders progressives, right? Yeah. Remember them. Remember how they were with Bernie, right? Yeah. Whichever of the candidates got, those were going to emerge, was going to emerge from that field of 15 candidates. So they were given control of the portfolio, the immigration portfolio, after the election in order to keep them on board. And their ideas are far, far beyond anything in the mainstream Democratic Party's history.
Right.
That's why, I mean, the Democrats have never done anything like this. Well, nor
you detail ever. That. You detail that. You detail what happens in 2014 and the steps that Obama took to make sure that this was not going to continue to be an issue, and Jay Johnson as well. And so they were blush if they saw the numbers that Trump, and then, of course, even more so that Biden is now let in.
That's exactly right. You know, listen, even Clinton, Bill Clinton, has come out against what is going on at the border. He was a pretty tough Democrat on illegal immigration. I mean, he signed into law one of the big, toughest anti-illegal immigration laws on the books in 1996. And even Bernie Sanders was an anti-illegal immigration guy all the way up until 2016. Obama has come out against what he's seeing down there. He's like, you know, we can't sustain this. Obama, when he was in office, was asked, and I recount this in the book, he was asked by a DACA guy who, you know, why do you keep deporting people? Why don't you stop deporting and detaining people? And he turned to the kid and he said, because it's the law. I have to follow the law. And then he said, I am not a king. I can't just decide not to follow the law. Well, guess what? The Biden administration and Joe Biden have decided I am a king, and I am going to just stop doing all this deportation, and he did it. So this is, we are in brand new territory for even the Democrats. They are so far, I don't know if it's ever going to correct back.
Well, and speaking of new terrain, basically, cartels obviously are running a lot of these human smuggling, you know, this is a huge business for them. But it used to be a business, I think in your book, you said something around 500 million that's grown exponentially. Now estimates are as high as $6 billion for the cartel, which is way more business for them than bringing up drugs. Talk a little bit about that for us.
Right. And that is out of date now. Nobody, by the way, it was between $6 billion and $13
billion. Wow.
And that was just in the 2021 year. I mean, 2022, 2023. So, it's gotta be way more than 13 billion by now, if it was that at all. And, it's incredibly lucrative. The cartels are taking every bit of advantage. They put the sail up in the wind, in that wind, and they have caught it, baby. They are making tremendous profits on this. They are making so much money. There's so much inventory out there that they early in 2021 took to requiring every immigrant to pay in advance and then and get a wristband. You can find those. They're still using the wristband inventory control system to this day in the Rio Grande Valley. And you can find thousands of them on the riverbank. Because they just couldn't, they had to find a way to control that everybody paid them. And you can't get in a boat unless you show your wristband, like at a water park or something.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like a water park.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and the thing is like now they can be so open about it. They can openly advertise for this. There's no really secret agenda anymore because our own president's like, come on, let's do this. So it's building the wrong kind of business, obviously, that we don't want to see.
Well, you know. Yeah. And let me just talk, you talk about Biden and what he's done. I want to play you one other quick soundbite, and it's from Mayorkas on MSNBC right when the administration took over. So what he talks about in this interview is the efforts that they're going to engage in to try to basically dismantle all the things that Trump has done. So let's just listen to that real quickly.
Trump era immigration policies have been banned, ended, reversed, and if any investigations are underway by you.
So we have rescinded so many Trump immigration policies, it would take so much time to list them.
Okay, so one of those is the fact that what's happened with prosecution of people trying to get into the country illegally with criminal records. A lot of time there's this thought process where when you talk about this in the book that they merge legal and illegal immigration. And what they've done also in opening the floodgates is they've stopped prosecuting in many cases people that are not only here illegally, but that have committed crime. Can you go through some of those numbers and what's happened?
Yes. There's so much that they did that reversed the flow out of the country through deportation. Remember, a key plank in both the Harris campaign and the Biden campaign, and all of them, was that they were going to end deportation in the interior. All of them had this. I mean, it was striking. It was the first, and nobody seemed to question it. We're not going to do deportation anymore in the United States. And one of the ways to get there is to dismiss active immigration cases against hundreds of thousands of individuals. And they have systematically dismissed by failing to check the box or to do a paperwork. They, on purpose, the DOJ, which runs the immigration services, did not check boxes, did not file the paperwork that was on purpose, that was necessary to sustain cases that had been filed in the prior administration. Yeah. So you had just hundreds of thousands of cases just dismissed by judges, and all those people free to roam around. The administration did some other clever things. They created these no-go zones throughout the interior, college campuses, schools, anywhere near a military base. Just they had a whole long list of no-go zones of all different kinds where ICE agents could not tread. So you created sanctuaries throughout the United States where nobody could come and get you and do a deportation, even if there was a lawful order. They tried to do a moratorium on all deportations, even for criminals, of 100 days. That got thrown out in court. But what they did instead was they arranged for ICE agents to abide by all these complex new rules that required ultimately that you can't go arrest anyone, no matter how bad they are, unless you file paperwork to Washington, get it approved, it comes back, and then you can go get the guy. And more times than not, the answer was no. And for the rest of it, it took so long that the guy was gone by the time that, you know, that you couldn't find him anyway. So effectively, deportations from the interior ended, and so did cases being made to get judges' orders, final judges' orders of removal, just went plummeting down like this. Lots of sort of like inner working, kind of brilliant policy stuff, really, for open borders people, that had the net effect of leaving in the country hundreds of thousands of people that should be deported.
And what do we do? So what do we do now? Like, I'm looking at this case, and we talk about it all the time. What's the solution? What's the answer? What would you do? Like, what do you think that needs to be done by Biden and by Congress at this point? Or is there anything they can do?
Well, I mean, mostly this is a matter of litigation. It's about the Supreme Court, because what you have is an administration that is refusing to follow the laws that are dutifully, lawfully passed by Congress and signed by prior presidents. And they're just simply not doing it. So there's litigation that's working through there. They're not having good luck with it. So they tried an impeachment. The impeachment, obviously, you've got a split chamber. So that's not working. And even if it did work, they've just put another guy in there that's even worse, right? Who just wouldn't do it. So ultimately, you're getting down to brass tacks, these are federal levers of power, of bureaucracy, of policy. And you just simply have to have a change in administrations if you want to have any of this change. It's a ballot box issue ultimately. And I people don't like to hear that, but it's just simply it's just the truth. I mean, if you have a president that doesn't want to do what Obama said, which is, I have no choice but to enforce the law, they've come out and said, I have lots of choice and I choose not to enforce the law. What are you going to do about it? This is just a time-consuming process to force that issue, either through impeachment or litigation or through the ballot box.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's get into the raw politics of this. There's good data right now from a lot of different polling that says this is now the number one issue for people across the country. You see places like New York City that are overwhelmed. Before we talked to you, we did a story in Denver where the Denver healthcare system is collapsed. You cannot get people in there now. Here in New Mexico, we've seen indications that the University of New Mexico healthcare system is under stress as well. So this has definitely got tentacles all across the country here. And given how Governor Abbott has handled himself, which I think is admirable, he has brought this issue to many communities who would just as soon forget about it because they're not border communities. So what do you think is going to happen here as far as this issue goes? Do you think the border issue is going to be the deciding issue in this election? Do you have any idea where this is going to go? And could this be the issue that could cost Biden the presidency?
I do think that it is, the polls are clear, it is the top issue. A lot of the polling is showing that more people are concerned about this than they are inflation, which is remarkable. I almost don't even believe those polls, but there they are. And I think the reason for that is because for the midterm elections, 2022, the pipelines hadn't really backed up enough to burst. The pipes hadn't burst yet. Now the pipes have burst. They're bursting all over northern cities, all over America. Everybody is seeing this now. They don't have to be down at the border. They don't have to watch Fox News drones. It's in their face, and it's breaking their budgets, and it is pissing off Black communities, Latino communities, classic Democratic constituencies, and lots of independent voters that were siding with Biden initially. And so I think that it could have more of an impact on the national election coming up than it did in 2022. The other thing is, you know, the abortion ruling had just come out in 2022, and it dampened what we expected to be a bigger sweep for the Republicans in the House and the Senate and everywhere.
And governor's races.
And governor's races. Yeah, we know that personally. So
it really did. And now we've had another couple years to kind of process that. You can see that the Democrats are working really hard using that issue to counter the immigration issue, the illegal immigration issue. It remains to be seen if that works again for them a second time. But I'm telling you, you know, lots of cities. Now, these are blue cities, New York, Denver, Chicago. I don't expect that there are enough in those communities to change the electoral college numbers in some of those places. But I suspect that there are a lot of other cities that are kind of purple, in purple states, in swing states, that are not as squeaky wheel, that are suffering in silence, watching this and just infuriated, but you never hear from those mayors or those governors. But I suspect that in the swing states, it's going to really matter in those swing states, not so much in Chicago and New York,
right,
Illinois, and some of these other already blue. Doesn't matter how many you piss off in those places, they're still going to be blue.
One last question. We'll get you out of here on this one. One last question for you, and that is, what do you think? What's your prediction on how things go over the next 6 months? Do you see the Biden administration trying to mitigate some of these issues by taking some steps, maybe going and doing a few things, instituting a few things, maybe that they got rid of before, whether it be safe third country, you know, remain in Mexico, anything like that? Or do you think they're just going to try to roll with where they are? So if you look into your crystal ball and you know there's an election surrounding all this, where do you see the immigration issue going as we head toward Election Day?
So I think the progressive far left faction of the party is just as important to the Biden reelection bid as it was in the 2020. And we can see them flexing their muscles over the Israel thing. because they stood down in the recent primaries to as a show of strength. We, if you don't change your policy on Israel, we're not showing out for your primary campaign. Now, whether they're going to actually do that in the real election where the votes are is almost beside the point. The Biden administration is worried that if it does one more thing to piss them off, that they will stay home. And that is the difference between a Trump administration and a Biden, a second Biden one. It really is. It's these are narrow, thin margins of win. And so I think what I see Biden doing is what he can invisibly so that they can't see it. And that is a deal with Mexico that I mentioned earlier.
Yep, yep.
There is definitely a deal with Mexico. Mexico has 30,000 troops on the ground deployed all over Mexico, rounding up immigrants. I was just down there. I watched them do it. Hundreds and hundreds of immigration officers. And then he can just say, well, that's not me. I don't know anything. Well, I don't know why they're doing that. So that has been pretty effective. He's halved the numbers. But here's the problem. As we get closer to the election, I think it's already starting to happen now, this early, is that immigrants are listening to Donald Trump.
That's right. They're going to come early.
The Trump effect. If you read my book, you saw the chapter about the first Trump effect and the first equal and opposite Biden effect, which is all this rhetoric. And so I believe that the possibility that Trump winning will spur an initial pile drive to the border that will go through even Mexican defenses to get in before Trump wins, in case he does win, to get in. And so I expect that the numbers are going to keep climbing.
Could get worse because they're scared. So they make a run and try to get into the country before Donald Trump wins.
That's what I think is going to happen in the next 6 months.
Wow.
Well, okay. I mean, we appreciate your time so much. Great book. Overrun is a great book. It will also scare you to death. But I do think that people should be interested. If they are interested in this topic or if they don't know very much about it, you're a great resource. This book is a great resource. We appreciate your time today. And you carving out a little bit of window to talk to us here in New Mexico and keep us enlightened.
No, thank you very much. New Mexico is very important. You're a frontline state. You got to have information in your state.
No right. doubt.
That's what we're trying to do. No doubt.
Thanks, Todd Benson. We appreciate it. Great book. And we'll talk to you soon, Todd.
Thank you.
You're listening to the No Doubt About It podcast. Back to your hosts, Christy and Mark Ronchetti.
A lot of information to swallow there.
Yeah. Todd's got so much background in what happens. And we didn't even get into the terrorism issue with him, which I would like to have talked to, but we had so much there. So we'll get him back at some other point and talk about the terrorism risk, because that is significant as well.
Right. Or more importantly, maybe get the guy's book and read it for yourself.
Yeah.
It is
worth it. Yeah. So. Check out Overrun. It is worth your time. It's a quick read, but it does jump into some in-depth causes and what happened here. And it really does kind of break away this thought of, that this should be a political issue.
Right.
It didn't used to be.
Right.
And that's why it's so strange that it now is.
Yeah, it just became this hotbed for it. I mean, they've all talked about immigration reform for, last 40 years. Right. Every politician has done that. But this just has become a whole new divided country issue.
Yeah.
When it really shouldn't be.
Yeah. But
we appreciate him giving us some time today. So.
Yep. Okay. So I have our last video of the day for you.
Okay.
Okay. So you got a husband who is playing a trick on his wife. And so he's got some rubber chickens. You know the rubber chickens? You squeeze them and then they make that sound?
Yeah, the girls used to collect them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So he goes and decides to put the rubber chickens in the tailpipe of his wife's car.
Oh.
Okay. So here is the result of that effort. Here we go. Watch. Okay. That she hadn't started the car yet. So there we go. So she's backing out. She can't. You can hear the sound they're making. And then look what she does. She's like, what the heck?
Like something going on with my car. What's wrong with it? It's making some noise like, wah, wah, wah.
How did he get the video of her inside the car?
He set up a camera. He set up a GoPro in the footwell of the passenger side.
This is what calls breaking trust with spouses.
Oh, that's right not there. True. This is one of the great jokes of all time.
I know. It's good. It's solid. But I'm just saying he went to great lengths to trick his wife.
Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic. Anyway. As you should.
All right. So, well, thanks for joining us today. We will be back on Monday with a whole new, I'm sure, bantering us.
Show. Some sort.
Some sort.
Yes.
We'll cobble something together for y'all. No, just kidding. We hope you have a great weekend and thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah, we'll see you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to the No Doubt About It podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We know we had a blast. Make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at No Doubt About It podcast.
No Doubt About It.
The No Doubt About It podcast is a Choose Adventure Media production. See you next time on No Doubt About It.
There is no doubt about it.